Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here today. So today I'm going to discuss the effectiveness of a brief curriculum to change young African American men's sexual reproductive health and healthcare behaviors. And in advance, I would like to thank my colleagues listed here, without whom this work would not have been possible. Specifically, I would like to thank our community partner, the historic East Baltimore Community Action Coalition, as well as the Youth Opportunities Program where this work was conducted, and the health education team at the Baltimore City Health Department. And for this talk, I, along with my co-authors, have nothing to disclose. We know that young African American males ages 15 to 24 have significant unmet sexual reproductive health needs, including high rates of STIs, HIV, and unplanned pregnancy. Older sexually active male adolescents are also less likely to report recent contact with the healthcare system. Although young African American males are more likely to report recent STI and HIV testing compared to similar aged white and Hispanic males, reports of these services among young African American males is still quite low. We also know that curricula designed to improve sexual reproductive health typically focuses on changing knowledge, attitudes, and behaviors among school-age populations. However, behavioral outcomes in these studies are typically stronger among younger compared to older participants and among youth who are pre-sexually active than among those who've already initiated sex. In addition, taking a school-based program to a community setting can be challenging, since these curricula typically involve many contact hours, as well as extensive training for the health facilitator. Finally, few of these curricula include addressing the importance of engaging in sexual reproductive health care among males. One promising intervention that evaluated a brief three-session sexual reproductive health curricula among mainly young Latino males in a community-based setting that focused on educational and job readiness in New York City found that participants in the intervention compared to the control arm showed improvements 3 months later in a number of areas, including sexual health knowledge, positive attitudes about condom use, fewer sexual partners in the last 3 months, positive healthcare use attitudes, and modest improvements in sexual reproductive healthcare use. At the time, our Baltimore study team was part of the Male Involvement Research Initiative, along with this New York study team. And secondary to the promising nature of these study findings, our funding agency, the Office of Family Planning, asked us to replicate the study in Baltimore. Because of the Hopkins Prevention Research Center's longstanding partnership with our community partner, we were rapidly able to field this intervention. Thus, the goal of our study was to replicate this brief sexual reproductive health and healthcare intervention in Baltimore City and examine whether the intervention is effective among a sample of young African American males enrolled in a similar community-based educational job readiness program. Specifically, the objective of this study was to demonstrate that this intervention improves participants' sexual reproductive health and healthcare knowledge and behaviors 3 months later. The study sample was recruited from a community-based organization that works directly with the community to address education and career development needs of out-of-school young persons. And inclusion criteria included participants being male, 16 to 25 years old, and English speaking. For this study, we used a two-group quasi-experimental pre-test post-test design, where health class served as a unit of recruitment, and recruitment occurred sequentially for intervention and comparison groups over about a 1.25-year period. Among all of the students approached, 100% agreed to participate and 197 were enrolled, with an 88% enrollment rate. All the participants completed a baseline survey, and the intervention was then administered to participants in assigned health classes. 3 months later, participants completed a follow-up survey in person or by telephone, and we had a 77% retention rate. The intervention itself consisted of 3 one-hour sessions that occurred immediately after the GED health class and was administered on consecutive days, as was the original intervention. In Baltimore City, the intervention was led by 2 African-American male health educators. And our particular learning objectives included for the first session to identify STI symptoms of and modes of transmission, that STIs and HIV can be asymptomatic, methods to avoid STI acquisition, and that STIs can facilitate HIV transmission. For the second session, to demonstrate proper condom use to prevent STIs and or pregnancy, as well as ways to make condoms more pleasurable, as well as to assist partner use of emergency contraception. And during both of these sessions, participating clinics were advertised and spoken about, but the third session's goal was primarily to increase knowledge about the local clinical settings and how men get examined during a clinical encounter, and particularly tested and treated for chlamydia, moving away from more invasive methods like swabs to urine-based, easy-to-collect, non-invasive methods. Each class was taught using an interactive PowerPoint slide presentation set and hands-on learning approaches. And before we implemented the study, the original study team demonstrated the curriculum to our project staff. They helped us make guided updates to the lesson content and visual materials that didn't alter the original content, but made the curriculum more appropriate for our target setting, including use of community neighborhood names, as well as photos and information about participating clinics. Edits also made it more culturally appropriate for our predominantly African American population by replacing photos and visuals with local art and persons of similar backgrounds. Our project staff, before implementing, also conducted a couple of pilot tests with the curricula with local youth who provided feedback, also observed by the original study team, who likewise provided constructive feedback that was incorporated into our curriculum before we implemented in the community setting. All participants received $15 as a gift certificate after completing the baseline survey, and for those who completed the 3-month survey as a follow-up, they received $35 gift certificates. So taking into account both participant incentives as well as program staff and supplies, the cost per participant was about $270. Both the baseline and follow-up surveys were short, just 3 pages in length, and assess participant background characteristics, including age, race, ethnicity, last grade in school that they completed, current health insurance status, last healthcare visit. Outcome variables included 6 items on sexual reproductive health knowledge about condoms, STIs, and HIV, 4 items on healthcare knowledge about places where one can get confidential care, low-cost care, and specific knowledge about the community-based clinics, 3 items on condom attitudes, 5 items on sexual behavior, including whether they've had sex, the number of sexual partners they've had, how often they use condoms, and whether they use lubricant with their condoms in the last 3 months, and then a final measure on condom use at last sex. And then 2 items on healthcare behavior, and these are both asked within the last 3 months, whether they've talked to a healthcare provider about STIs and HIV and or contraception, and whether they've been tested for STIs and HIV. We conducted standard tests here. We performed t-tests and chi-squared to examine baseline differences between intervention and comparison participants on key demographic and outcome characteristics. And given the longitudinal nature of our study design, we applied a random intercept coefficient model to account for 3 levels, including repeated measures, individuals in the classroom, that allows us to estimate individual odds of the treatment effect. Specifically, we're able to describe an individual's odds of change in study outcomes over time among persons who received the health education curriculum compared to those who did not. We ran separate models for each study outcome, with each outcome treated as a time-varying variable. We first ran analyses adjusting for last grade completed, the only demographic factor in which the intervention and control groups differed, and then ran analyses adjusting for appropriate baseline demographics, knowledge, attitudes, and behaviors. So moving on to our results. Our study population included 197 males, 99 in the comparison group, and 98 in the intervention group. About a third were ages 16 to 17, another third 18 to 19, and the remaining males were 20 to, actually I should say 25. The majority of our males self-identified as African American. About half reported that their last grade completed was 9th grade or less, and another half reported having completed 10th or 11th grade. And under two-thirds reported having visited a healthcare provider in the last year and having health insurance. In the next three slides, I'm going to review our baseline data for both groups and then talk about our intervention impact. Participants in both groups reported similar average knowledge about condoms and STIs, HIV, and less than average knowledge about healthcare settings. They reported similar positive attitudes about condoms, with the majority of participants disagreeing that there's no way to enjoy sex with a condom, agreeing that they would not have sex if they wanted to have sex with a new partner but they did not have a condom, and positive attitudes about condoms. Regarding sexual behavior, participants reported in the last 3 months similar reports of sexual behavior, number of partners, with about a third reporting three or more partners and some condom use, as well as very similar reports of very little lubricant use with condoms, and the majority reported that they used a condom to last sex. And finally, regarding healthcare behavior at baseline, similar proportions of participants reported in the last 3 months regarding the degree to which they talked to a provider about contraception and or STIs and HIV, but more control participants reported getting checked in the last 3 months for STIs, HIV than intervention participants. So in the next three slides, I'll summarize our intervention impact. And for the purposes of just time, I'm going to talk about our full adjusted models. So regarding knowledge, after adjusting for just the background factors, a male in the intervention group was 57% more times more likely to report increases in knowledge about sexual reproductive health as well as healthcare from baseline to follow-up compared to a male in the comparison group. So you can see here, this is just the follow-up data, but where there was really no difference between baseline knowledge, sexual reproductive health knowledge, and healthcare knowledge between both groups, whereas the comparison group just remained static, the intervention group increased in their knowledge, and this is on a 0-1 scale. As I mentioned previously, this analysis accounts for an individual's baseline score and his own error. And despite increasing trends in condom attitudes among intervention participants, these results were not statistically significant. Among our five sexual behaviors, we found the intervention had a significant impact on two. After adjusting for relevant demographic knowledge and attitude factors, a male in the intervention group was 84% more likely to report increases in his percent of condom use during the last 3 months from baseline to follow compared to a male in the comparison group. We also observed significantly increased odds in the report of lubricant use with condoms during the last 3 months among males in the intervention group compared to the comparison group. Finally, we found intervention had significant impact on both healthcare behaviors. After adjusting for relevant demographic and knowledge factors, a male in the intervention group was 48% more likely to report increases in talking to a provider about contraception and STIs, HIV during the last 3 months from baseline to follow-up compared to male in the comparison group. And we also observed significantly increased odds of reports of getting checked for STIs, HIV during the last 3 months among intervention than comparison group males. So in summary, we found that a brief sexual reproductive health intervention was found to increase knowledge related to sexual reproductive health and healthcare, and behaviors including the proportion of condom use of lubrication with condoms, talking to a healthcare provider about contraception and STIs and HIV, and getting checked for STIs and HIV in the last 3 months. However, the intervention wasn't found to change any attitudes, impact on sexual abstinence, the number of partners, or condom use at last sex. Limitations to the study include the fact that the intervention took place in one location, thus increasing the risk of contamination. Also, the unit of assignment was the classroom, thus potentially limiting our explanatory power. Our use of self-report measures focus on knowledge, attitudes, and behaviors rather than sexual reproductive health outcomes, such as STIs and or report of pregnancy, because in part we had a short follow-up of 3 months. However, we were able to successfully replicate the New York City intervention that was developed predominantly for Latino young men among similarly aged African American males in Baltimore. Beyond just improving sexual knowledge and behaviors, this study also increased young men's healthcare knowledge and behaviors related to sexual and reproductive health. Future work should examine whether study findings are maintained over a longer follow-up period and ways to reduce overall intervention cost for ease of implementation, such as using potentially newer technology, as was maybe described in our prior talk, and or other types of curriculum. I would like to acknowledge our health educators again, as well as our youth participants, without whom the study would not have been possible, as well as our colleagues from Columbia University who developed the original intervention, Dr. Deborah Kalmus, Dr. Bruce Armstrong, as well as our funding agencies listed here. Thank you.